Hey classmates, this is Kylan. You are now listening to Altar Call with Jay Davis, a collaboration with the Black Seminarians Table podcast.
It's Black Seminarian Table. Black Seminarian Table. It's Black Seminarian Table podcast.
I have a seat at the Black Seminarians table. What's going on, family? This is your favorite cousin, Jay Davis, here, and I'm just so excited to be back on another episode of Altar Call, where we dive into conversation that intersects Black faith and queerness and just the vibrant lives overall for the LGBTQ plus community. So welcome. On today's episode, we have Reverend Nicole Garcia, and I'm just so grateful to have her in the room with us. Remember, this is just a space where we are welcoming you to be your most authentic self and freely just roam in the room. And I hope that you truly gain something from this episode. So today's episode is really about faith and advocacy work. And if you didn't know already, I'm a faith organizer for Georgia Equality. And this is the first time that I've had that official title, but I feel like my whole life I've been doing faith and advocacy work, if not for LGBT bodies, then for Black bodies, right? For people of color. So I feel as though now that I'm in this position, it's helping me grow more and learn more on how to advocate for those like myself as a Black, non-binary, trans person, just trying to do the work, making sure that everybody is treated with equity and fairness, and that we continue to fight this justice for LGBTQ plus bodies. So, yes, welcome, Reverend Nicole. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jay. And I give thanks for the day that we met. I believe we met when you came to Denver. Yes. For the Equality Federation conference. Mm-hmm. And I live in a little town called Louisville, Colorado, oh, which is just west of Denver. So it was nice to have a conference in my backyard, so to speak. And it was a delight to meet you. And so just to tell you a little bit about me, I am currently employed as the Faith Work Director at the National LGBTQ Task Force. And so what I do is faith organizing on a national level. So I try and reach out to clergy across Abrahamic traditions, Christianity, Islam and Judaism, and then also into the non-Abrahamic traditions, into Buddhism, into Wiccan, paganism, humanism, so that we can build a coalition of faith leaders across the spectrum to address the Christo-fascist, the Christian nationalist obsession to create a theocracy within this country. They talk about that fallacy that this United States was built on Christian values. Really what it was built on people who wished to escape religious persecution. Have to remember, in Europe, in England especially, the church was part of the state. In so many of the European countries, the faith of the prince or the king or the ruler was the faith of the people. And so if you if you diverted from the state religion, then you were persecuted. So many, wow. So many people came here to the United States for religious freedom. And now all of a sudden, these Christian nationalists are trying to rewrite the story that we should implement Christianity as the faith of the people, when in reality, it's based on a fallacy. And I have a lot of dear friends who are Christian, but I have a lot of dear friends who are not. And we have to respect those who believe in something other than Christianity.
That, yes, to all of that. And then some, because when I don't think they heard you in the very beginning, but we met at Equality Federation in Denver, Colorado. And I'm grateful for our connection, because everything that you said, specifically towards interfaith leaders, like the just to gain advocacy work and do faith and advocacy work for all spectrums of faith, not just Christianity, not just the Christianity that we are known here to believe in America, but across the spectrum. Can you speak more about what got you to this position of doing faith and advocacy work?
Well, I was raised in the Roman Catholic Church, and I'm in my early 60s. So when I was growing up, the Roman Catholic Church was just really living into a post-Vatican II world, where all of a sudden the altars were moved from the back wall to the center of the chancel, where priests were facing people. All of a sudden they were giving up all the organ music, and guitars became the rage. So I grew up in the church where, you know, the long-haired hippie people came out with their guitars and sang praise to Jesus. And we were really trying to create a change within the church. And then when I ended up in college, I took some religious studies classes and Chicano studies classes. And that's where I really realized that I was Catholic, not out of faith, but out of colonization. My family all came from the southwestern United States. My family can trace, both sides of my family can trace their history back to the mid 1700s in northern New Mexico. And the priests would come over with the conquistadores, and they would convert everyone to Catholicism, and then the priests would go home. And all of a sudden, people were tasked with building a faith without leadership. And so we all created a type of faith that is related to Catholicism. For example, my grandfather was a penitente, which is a type of Catholicism built in northern New Mexico. We've all heard of Santeria, which is really big in the Caribbean and Cuba, which is a mixture of African beliefs and Catholicism.
Yes.
We're going to be having our conference in New Orleans in January of 2024. And I'm really, really excited to really talk to a voodoo priestess and the whole African integration of Christianity into the beliefs of the people that the people brought with them. So I left the Catholic Church in my early 20s. Mm-hmm. And when I transitioned in my early 40s, I had a reawakening of my faith, and I found the Lutheran Church. And I ended up joining the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America when the church was delving into a discussion about human sexuality. And of course, the whole marriage issue on the national scene was dominant. So when I became a Lutheran and coming out as a transgender Latina, I was kind of swept up into the whole conversation. So I became really involved in talking about what it means to be a welcoming and affirming church. Wow. We call it in the Lutheran tradition, in the evangelical Lutheran Lutheran Church in America, and a group I worked with called Lutherans Concerned. We call it Reconciling in Christ. Other denominations have other words for being open, welcoming, and affirming of the LGBTQ plus community. But I became really involved in those discussions within the church, and especially with a group called Lutherans Concerned, where I ended up on the board of directors. So I learned how to tell my story, because that's an important part, is telling your story about transition, telling your story, how can you be a person of faith and also a member of the LGBTQ plus community? How can I be a queer person and be a Christian?
Wow.
I learned how to tell those stories and present workshops. And on the other side, in the secular world, there was that whole discussion about marriage and marriage equality, and should we have approved domestic partnerships, or do we need to have full-blown marriage? And I was tapped to testify in the Colorado State Legislature multiple times. Mm-hmm. And different types of LGBTQ legislation, part of it around marriage, part of it around access to restrooms and bathrooms, part of it around bans on individuals playing sports, having access to locker rooms. So I basically got involved because of my identity as a queer transgender Latina and a person of deep personal faith who happened to be ordained as a minister of Word and Sacrament, a pastor in the ELCA. I got invited to speak a lot. And that's how I became involved, is by speaking, teaching, preaching about what it's like to be a queer transgender Latina of faith.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for sharing your story. It's something you said in there about, like, the reason why you got into this work is because of your identity. And I think so many LGBTQ plus people within this community have deep ties to their faith. And a lot of that you see within their work. I know, for example, for myself, I fell into this work because of my identity, but also because of my deep ties to my faith growing up within the Black church, and having to see, like, the Black church taught me so much about myself as an individual, but it also taught me a lot about community and what it means to advocate for those around you, right? The church and faith itself, to me, is a cornerstone when it comes to people advocating for themselves. And I think I want to also speak to, for those who do, for faith leaders who do not identify, but are allies, what are the ways in which they can advocate for the people who identify within their faith communities as part of the LGBTQ plus community? How can they advocate for their faith communities?
First, I always recommend that allies and advocates spend a lot of time educating themselves. Mm. You know, I consider myself a professional trans person. I get paid to be trans in many ways. And so for me, educating people, going into congregations and synagogues and talking with people through workshops, that's part of my job. But mm-hmm. I don't do it for free.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm going to do a workshop, you know, to walk in the front door for me is $500 because I value my time.
I know that's right.
This is how. Yeah. And so what happens so much of the time is an individual who identifies, who comes out as trans or in the LGBTQ plus community, all of a sudden allies assume that they are all of a sudden their source for information and resources.
Hmm.
In some ways, yes, they are, but is it fair for someone actively going through a transition to really delve in and talk to someone they really don't know about deep personal things?
In some ways, they almost become tokenized.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Most definitely. So I always advocate, if you're going to be an ally, spend time finding credible sources of information. There are a lot of great groups out there that have developed resources. I work with a group called the Welcoming Church Leaders Program through the Task Force. And this program is essentially all the executive directors of mainline Protestant organizations that have welcoming programs. Mm-hmm. So in my tradition, in the ELCA, we have Reconciling Works, Lutherans for Full Participation. That group has some incredible resources. I believe you are involved with Reverend Don Abram from Pride in the Pews. Pride in the Pews is doing some incredible work in the Black yes. Church and yes. has incredible resources online. Find Absolutely. Pride in the Pews. Reconciling Works. If you're mm-hmm. Presbyterian, go to More Light Presbyterian. If you're UCC, go to the Open and Firming Network. Find the welcoming programs within your denomination and look for the resources. You'll find resources on how to create open and welcoming worship, songs that are appropriate, lists of all the current identities. You know, what is the definition of trans? What is the definition of queer? What is the definition of bi, demisexual, pansexual? Find all those descriptions and educate yourself.
Absolutely.
So that you can come to the table and ask the right questions. What we really need are for people to become truly involved.
Yes.
And what we're finding is that, you know, so much of the time we get caught up with what's going on in Congress.
Mm-hmm.
And we feel so powerless because we can't affect anything. If you really want to be effective, attend your school board meetings. Mm-hmm. Heck, you should run for school board and be effective in changing laws. Run for city council. Go to city council meetings. Sit on, you know, a historical conservation committee for your city. Get on a committee or board in your local areas so that you can learn how your city makes laws and passes laws, and maybe run for city council, run for state representative, actually become involved with the political process.
And so, like, it sounds like to me that you're saying faith and advocacy work is not just about the faith leaders should not only just focus on educating themselves and being there for the congregations, but also getting involved within the community through policy work.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You know, as a Lutheran, Martin Luther really believed that civil society, there's a place for civil society alongside the church. Part of it is, I want roads.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be able to take my car out and trust that there's going to be a road. I want to have yes. Laws out there so that I feel comfortable going through a green light, that the other person's going to respect the red light.
Mm.
You know, there are certain things in order to live life in with each other in a civil manner. We need to have a civil laws. Now, Luther also believed that people of great faith will be compelled out of their belief in Jesus as their Lord and Savior, that belief will compel them to help the neighbor, that we are not looking forward to just filling our own pockets with gold, but rather using the resources of the community to help all people in the community.
Mm-hmm.
So if you
mm-hmm.
truly mm-hmm. love your neighbor, you want to serve your neighbor, serve yes on your congregational council. Yes, go and help mow the lawn at church and collect the be an usher at church. Do those things right. within the church. But you should also, helping the neighbor also means you get involved in helping everyone who lives around you.
Yes.
Not just your Christian neighbors, not just the people who you pray with at church, but all people. And getting onto city council and being a voice. How do we solve the unhoused problem? The fact that there is not enough affordable housing being built because it doesn't put money in developers' pockets. So how do we, as believers and people who believe that we should be living out a life filled with love, how do we ensure that our resources are being used to help everyone, not just a select few?
And that select few for me is because to me, the church has always been involved with advocacy work. It has always been there. I think about my own tradition in the Black faith tradition, Black church specifically, has been a stepping stone for civil rights movement. And when it comes to civil rights, the Black church has always been there in every aspect. We have been there from voice boycott. We have been there from making sure that we have equal treatment in the classroom and beyond that, voting rights, right? All these things, the I Am a Man movement, all of these movements occurred. But what I've noticed in the summer of 2020, not only were Black lives on the line, which they have always been, but it was more so Black trans women and trans women of color consistently being killed, right? And no one's saying anything about it, not even the church. And so to me, that spoke volumes that, there, yes, selected few only matter. And the reason why we're doing this episode is because I strongly believe that, like, faith leaders can and should make a difference within their community for every person, regardless whether they attend their congregation or not. We should be on the grounds doing the work.
I totally agree. Mm-hmm. And what I hear so much of the time is that this fallacy that if you're part of the church or you're a pastor, you cannot get involved in politics. It's true to an extent. We run, churches are under a 501c3. And a 501c3 means we can become involved in like ballot issues, in issues that laws that are in front of the state legislature. We cannot move into partisan politics. 501s, C4s and 527s, known as PACs, they can get much more involved into partisan politics. But as a pastor, I cannot talk about a political party. I can invite people who are running for office into a church to talk, but everyone has to be invited. So if my friend John Doe is running for mayor in my city, I can invite John Doe to come in and talk to my congregation because that's the person I want to win. But if I have every person who's a mayoral candidate come in and they all have the opportunity to speak, that's permissible. But everybody has to be invited. So it does get a little bit tricky.
Yeah.
But I testify at state legislature all the time. That's where our voices are heard in these committee meetings.
Yes. So, and I think though it gets
we can testify at committee meetings.
Yes. And though it gets a little tricky. Mm-hmm.
And we can get involved in rights for civil rights.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And to me, though, it gets a little tricky.
Now,
I'm sorry, say it again.
No. So I can right now, one of the big things coming out. Oh, can you hear me now?
No, I think you're kind of breaking up there.
Sorry.
No, you're fine.
Okay. One of the things we're working on at the task force, the Equality Act, and the Equality Act is that's been considered will ensure that there is equal protection under the law for the LGBTQ plus community. So that in housing, in job security, there's reducing discrimination. So I work in that and have brought together people To speak on it. I work with Interfaith Alliance and Keshet to make sure that we have faith representation whenever we go up on the hill to talk with people. So we can work in those areas that benefit all people, but mm-hmm. I can't, you know, advocate for any one person or political party.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. I think what faith and advocacy work does, it disrupts the norms of what people think faith leaders are doing, right? Normally, mm-hmm. When people hear that I'm a faith organizer, they say, well, perfect example would be when I started seminary, the first question I got from family and friends were, you're becoming a pastor. And for me, it was a no. But it doesn't mean that I, within my advocacy work or within my faith organizing work, that I'm not doing some form of pastoring, right? That I'm not doing some form of pastoral care, or even within, that I'm not doing some form of like disruption. And I appreciate disrupting, normalities, right? I want to speak to the resources that faith leaders can use that are available to them. Like how does one stir up the conversation within their own faith community? When it comes to advocacy work, how does one get their foot in the door, if that makes sense?
You know, again, working with the Welcoming Church Leaders program, years ago, we developed a program called Building an Inclusive Church. Hmm. And right now we're on the third iteration of the toolkit.
Wow.
But this Building an Inclusive Church programs helps individuals within congregations start to have conversations mm-hmm. with people about how do we become an open and welcoming congregation. And part of it is to create a core group of people who are really willing to spend the time to educate themselves on the nomenclature, on how this congregation is formed, to where the power, where the people behind the power in a congregation, how are the people within the congregation, how are they posed to actually do some deep discerning about what it means to be totally welcoming? And so when you start having those conversations among people about what does it be welcoming, part of the conversation is, are you willing to advocate for the LGBTQ plus community? Are you willing to not just welcome people into your church, but are you willing to table at the Pride Festival? Are you willing to walk in the Pride Parade? Are you willing to call your senators and congresspeople and city council people and school board members to advocate for the LGBTQ plus community? Exactly. So part of this discernment process in a congregation is, it's not just, well, we'll let you come in and sit and we'll give you a cup of coffee and a bulletin. And we'll teach you how we do things. That's not really advocating or changing and recognizing that all people are worthy of God's love, but rather having deep conversation about what does it mean to have a lesbian couple with kids in your congregation, and one of them is head of the Altar Guild and the other leads the youth programs. That is really integrating,
yes.
You know, that the lesbian community into the church. What does it mean to have a trans pastor? How are you willing to support that trans pastor within your congregation?
Yes.
How are you willing to open up and speak about what it means to be an open and welcoming congregation? What if your denominational paper or newsletter approaches your pastor and says, please write an article for our newsletter, what are the people in the congregation going to say when their pastor writes a positive newsletter article that's going to be seen by thousands of people in their denomination? Are they going to celebrate, or are they going to say, wait a second, that's a little bit too far? So it's really important to have those conversations, deep personal conversations with members of the congregation, so that one, they can truly be inclusive, truly be open and welcoming and affirming, and willing to show up in places where we need to hear their voices.
Wow. Well, thank you so much. Thank you, because everything you said, you hit it right on the nail. Hit the nail right on it.
Thank you.
I really appreciate all the work that you're doing for the LGBTQ+ community. I'm so grateful for our connection once again. And to the faith leaders who are listening to this podcast, remember, it is about educating yourself and your congregation. It is also about promoting dialogue that is building relationship between you and the community around you. It is about publicly, not just privately, publicly supporting and advocating for LGBTQ+ rights, because this is your community. And it's about leading in that example about doing that. Faith and advocacy work is a tough work, but it's a good work. And it is a long work, right? This is not something that happens overnight, but it's something that continues to be built every single day. So with that being said, you all, thank you again, Reverend Nicole, for being here. I really appreciate you and all your work. I can't say that enough. And thank you to Altar Call for just tuning in and listening. Until next time, y'all. Y'all stay blessed. Seminary and table, Black seminary and table. It's Black seminary and table podcast. I have a seat at the Black seminarian's table.
I have a seat at the Black seminarian's table.